Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How do you get around town every day? And how do you feel about people who choose different modes of transportation from the one you like best? Like metropolitan areas across the country, North Texas has seen its share of tension in recent years between motorists, pedestrians, and the growing number of bicyclists jockeying for space on city streets. So what fuels all that acrimony? And do we have the power to make everybody's travels safer and more pleasant? Evan Weiss blogs under the name Bike Snob NYC and writes a column for Bicycling Magazine. He writes about these questions in his new book, The Enlightened Cyclist: Commuter Angst, Dangerous Drivers, and Other Obstacles on the Path to Two-Wheeled Transcendence. Evan, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So you have commuted by bike for a very long time, but you were never more convinced of the ideal nature of cycling as a way for getting around as you were on 9/11 when you were living in New York City. Can you tell us about your memories of that day?
My memories of that day, it's not a day I like to think about. It was a horrible day, obviously. My memories of that day are of my ex-wife. I'm married at the time. I was married previously. My wife, so my ex-wife now, was in the area of Ground Zero while all that was happening, and I was home in Brooklyn, and I had to get to her. So I basically rode to Ground Zero while all that was happening through the chaos, and two things stay with me about that, apart from the obvious horrific nature of the event. Number one is that, I mean, there's no way faster than a bike in New York. I could not have done that under any other circumstances, gotten to her. And number two, more importantly, is that the days after that, the following days and weeks in New York, the outpouring of goodwill among people in New York, the sense of neighbor helping neighbor and all of this sort of thing, it was overwhelming. And what that said to me was that underneath all this fighting and acrimony and yelling at each other we do all day on our commutes, there really is fundamentally a compassion we all share, and we do care about each other. That's what is underneath it all. So when I'm riding out there and I'm frustrated and you get into situations where there's arguing and so forth, try to remember that. I try to remember this is a superficiality. We really do care about each other, and we can, you know, we can get back to that.
You write, and I really love this, that we all want the same thing, which is essentially to be happy and to not get killed. Why then do sort of tribes form as people take up sides and they side with or against other people based on the mode of transportation?
I think there's a number of things at work. I mean, we tend to do that sort of thing as people. It's easy to just kind of latch on to one thing and dislike other things. It's the same reason we like one brand over the other or one sports team over the other. We like to identify. It's simplistic. Also, though, it's something that I think the media certainly helps that along. You take this tendency we have to champion one thing over another, and you kind of stoke that whole fire by doing these articles about bikes versus cars and so forth, and playing this whole thing up as a rivalry, and all of these things contribute to all of this anger out there.
And of course, most cyclists also drive on occasion, but the same is not necessarily true for most motorists.
Yes and no. I mean, how many people have honestly had no experience with a bicycle?
Yeah, well, for some people, it's been decades.
Bicycles are sold. If bicycles were not mainstream, even in the United States, they wouldn't have them in Walmart and Target. I mean, granted, sometimes they're lumped in with the toys or whatever, but the bicycle is as common as anything. Almost any adult in the United States rides a bike occasionally, or has ridden a bike occasionally, or has a friend who rides often, or this is not something that's rare or outside of anybody's experience. It's just that sometimes when you're sitting in the seat of a car, you forget you're looking at a person out there. You're looking at someone on a bike, and you have these sort of these odd reactions that the fact that you maybe have to swerve a tiny bit or slow down for half a second to safely pass, you get angry for no reason.
Yeah, cars do a strange thing to us. I mean, I have never in my life screamed a mean word at somebody who got in my way, say, in the grocery store or, you mm-hmm. know, walking across the street. But somehow when you're in your car, you're just filled with this sense that you're against the other car, not the other person almost.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're inside a big machine. You're very insulated. It's more the mentality you have, and is more like sitting on the couch and watching TV. I mean, you're detached, and on top of that, look, I'm not an anti-car person at all. I drive when I need to drive. You know, cars can be great, but at the same time. I think we use them more than we should because we've become so car-centric. We use them in situations where they're not the ideal mode of transport. And as a consequence, a lot of the time we're driving, we're frustrated because a car is great when you're out on the open road, but it's extremely cumbersome in the city or during rush hour or anything like that. So of course you're mad when you're driving one. It's huge. It's hard to put it anywhere. If there's any congestion, you're stuck. You know, it's very, very cumbersome. So it's like, So sure, it makes you angry.
So, Evan, in this part of the country, a lot of people are working very hard to get dedicated bike lanes and sort of fantasizing about how perfect everything would be if only we had these. And this is not necessarily the case in your experience.
There can be backlashes to bicycling infrastructure. I mean, I don't think there's any question that we need more of it. And certainly where I live, what the addition of a bicycling infrastructure has done has just improved cycling tremendously. But, you know, there is a little bit of a backlash. There is a backlash. At the same time, I think the backlash is, I think it is the minority. I think it's a very vocal minority. I think it's again, like we were saying earlier, it's so easy to pit drivers and cyclists against each other. I think there's politicians who like to play that up by pointing to the bike lanes and telling people, well, look, they're doing this for them. They're not doing anything for you. And it's an easy way to rile people up.
In places where lots of people commute by bike, there is occasionally annoying cyclist on cyclist behavior. We'll talk about some of those things, starting with what it means to be a bike salmon, which maybe is obvious.
A bike salmon, that's salmon swims against the current, so a bike salmon rides the wrong way against traffic.
And I guess this is something that people just don't think about the rules of the road applying to a bicycle?
I think there's a couple of things going on. One of them is that, look, when you're on a bicycle, for all the reasons it's great, it's light, it's small, it's maneuverable, it makes it very easy to just go where you want to go without sort of thinking about it, in the same way that when we walk, most of the time, we're not really all that concerned about riding in a straight line. People jaywalk all the time. It's normal. No one's standing No one's waiting for lights to change on foot when there's absolutely nobody around. So a bicycle sort of inspires the same behavior. But more importantly than that, though, is that even now, as we're getting bike infrastructure, I mean, almost every place in this country, the streets are just designed for cars. That's it. They're just bicycles are not have never been taken into account, really, or not like they should. So of course you're riding in survival mode. Like these signals are supposed to apply to you, but they're completely irrelevant to the way a bicycle works, to the way you interact with cars. So people just ride the way they have to ride. They ride kind of seemingly randomly. So that's a question of more infrastructure.
Are you there? Okay, we seem to have lost the signal with Evan Weiss, so we will get him back on the line right now. Evan Weiss is my guest. He blogs under the name Bike Snob NYC. He also writes a column for Bicycling Magazine. We are speaking this hour about his new book, The Enlightened Cyclist: Commuter Angst, Dangerous Drivers, and Other Obstacles on the Path to Two-Wheeled Transcendence. Of course, this hour we will also want your input. So if you've had experiences as a motorist, as a cyclist, or as a pedestrian experiencing either one, we would love to hear you. Evan, are you back on the line with us?
Wonderful.
Okay, great. Talk about this. There is probably a great deal more bad driver on cyclist behavior. But before we move to that, cyclists make one another crazy by occasionally engaging in a sort of race that the other party didn't ask for. And this one struck me as odd, but I'm so slow and boring on my bike that no one would think of racing with me. But this
You'd
is something
think they wouldn't.
So people just basically just start. Describe what happens.
What happens is people can be a little over exuberant about being on bikes, so they they maybe see other people on bikes and engage them in races. Where I live, it's anytime the street goes, anytime there's an uphill, that's really when people throw down. So like in New York, if you're riding over the bridge from Brooklyn to Manhattan, for example, people will these are commuters, you know, will just race each other over the bridge. And it can be very irritating to just be making your way over the bridge and sense that there's someone behind you just sitting on your wheel, like trying to keep up with you and poised to pounce and go around you. And it's unnecessary. It's a little psychic stress you don't need.
And I guess it could get dangerous, too.
It could be dangerous. I think it can be dangerous. Honestly, I think the psychological implications are worse.
Yeah.
I don't think people want to feel like they're in a race. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people want to be engaged in this sort of thing.
All right, so let's talk about drivers on cyclists. First of all, I will say, and we've done shows about this before, there are people, maybe in every part of the country, certainly in this part of the country, that will make the argument, well, the roads are not for bicycles, they were made for cars.
They were made for cars, so we didn't have roads before cars. The road was invented specifically to accommodate the automobile, I suppose.
But you've heard this argument.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of arguments. You know, people believe a lot of crazy things. You know, that's not true. I'm not going to go into the whole policy of what our taxes pay for and all of that. But I'm just going to say very simply that it's just not true. The roads are public, and more importantly, in a lot of places, like for example where I live, I did some research, and you know, a lot of these roads were built. The reason the cities grew the way they did, like New York, areas around New York, it was bicycles. The reason, you know, it was bicycle traffic influenced the way the city grew. You know, there were paving roads and putting paths over the bridge, you know, for bicycles. So it's just not true.
So one phenomenon that you've noticed often is that a lot of motorists feel instantly the need when they see a cyclist to get out from behind that cyclist at all costs.
Yeah. There seems to be this basic assumption if you're driving that you are more important and that you need to be in front. So the way that manifests itself is if you're on a bicycle and you're riding along, and let's say there's a car double parked. Now, if you were driving and there was a car in front of you approaching a double parked car, you wouldn't speed ahead of the car in front of you and try to go around all of them at the same time. You wait for the driver in front of you to go around, then you go around.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if you're on a bike is the person behind you sees the obstruction up front and immediately stomps on the pedal to overtake you and the obstruction. And it's the same thing at intersections. If you're riding through an intersection and the person behind you wants to make a right-hand turn, oftentimes they'll just stomp on the pedal and make the right-hand turn in front of you. And this is a serious problem. A lot of people get killed that way. And it's for the simple reason that a driver doesn't understand that you wait your turn.
Evan Weiss is with us. He blogs under the name Bike Snob NYC, and he's the author of the new book, The Enlightened Cyclist. If you'd like to join this conversation, get on the line now at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Evan Weiss. He blogs as Bike Snob NYC, and he writes a column for Bicycling Magazine. We're talking this hour about his new book, The Enlightened Cyclist, Commuter Angst, Dangerous Drivers, and Other Obstacles on the Path to Two-Wheeled Transcendence. Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. How nervous does it make you when you realize that any car at any moment could open the driver's side door in your path?
Nervous isn't the right word because I'm very aware of it and look out for it. But it's definitely something I'm aware of and not happy about.
Now, among the legitimate beefs that you say drivers might have with cyclists is one that it really took me by surprise. The number of cyclists that ride around without effective brakes, is this really a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's been a thing for a while. There's been a increased popularity. I don't even know if it's popular anymore. I mean, I think its biggest days are probably behind it at this point. But riding track racing bicycles don't have brakes on them because they don't need to have brakes on them because they're raced on tracks indoors. But riding them on the street became popular in the last 5 or 7 years or something like that. So in a lot of cities, it's sort of a thing to do to ride a track racing bike around.
We have an email here from David in Dallas who writes, I live near White Rock Lake, which, Eben, is a sort of a small but very nice urban lake in town in Dallas. David writes, I do not mind cyclists in general, but my biggest complaint is when they're on roads and do not follow road signs. There have been several times when I've driven under Mockingbird on Lothar and almost run over a cyclist as they constantly run the stop signs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, you know, I don't have nothing against cyclists, and I don't mind drivers most of the time, but I'm really annoyed when drivers don't obey the road signs, and I have almost been hit many times by drivers who don't stop at stop signs. So there you go. It's something everybody, drivers do it, cyclists do it. Nobody should do it. Everybody should follow the road signs. Pointing out, singling out cyclists for that behavior is something that we tend to do. I don't even know why we do it. We just, there's this tendency to pick on cyclists, maybe because drivers, so many people are driving and the enormity of driving and how dangerous it is, we've just accepted it at this point. But, that, you know, it's a much bigger problem when drivers run stop signs, which they do all the time. You know, people die, not the people doing it, the people they hit. So that's the thing to bear in mind, is to sort of acknowledge that everybody is doing this. This is not a cycling problem.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Taylor on the line in Stephenville. Hi, Taylor.
Hi there. I recently made the transition to riding a bicycle around Stephenville, which is a relatively rural community. And there are literally no provisions for cyclists. And I wanted to ask the caller if he has any comments or recommendations about approaching the local government about getting implications to consider cyclists, because it is kind of growing because there's a college out here in Stephenville.
What do you think, Evan?
That's a tough question for me because I'm not familiar with the area and how the government works But it would certainly seem to me that it's a good idea to find other, kind of get together with other people who are riding bikes and to communicate that to the people who make those decisions. Bring this to the attention of the town that you need these things. Find the nearest bike advocacy group. Maybe it's a small enough town that there isn't one, but maybe in the nearest urban center or the nearest big town probably has some kind of bicycle advocacy group, and it would certainly be worth contacting them and asking them that question. You know, we're lucky in this country that we do have a lot of bicycle advocates working. Even if they're not anywhere near you, they'd probably be happy to give you advice. So that's what I would do.
Since you live in New York City, I'm guessing day to day, most of your riding is very urban. But I wonder if it's a totally different set of issues and problems and concerns you have when you are out in the country somewhere sharing a road with cars.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different. As chaotic as things can be in the city, to some degree, I feel a lot safer. Maybe I feel safer because it's familiar, but I also think you're safer because there's more people around and people are a little more accustomed, drivers are a little more accustomed to seeing pedestrians, to seeing bicycles, to seeing all of this stuff. Me personally, if I'm riding in the country or whatever it is, my concern is just, you know, maybe somebody driving very fast on an empty stretch of road and not being on the phone or something like that and drifting into the shoulder and hitting me.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Kate in Dallas. Hey, Kate.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. Well, I'm a lifelong bicycle commuter. As a child, my dad had us all on bicycles commuting. In my 20s and 30s, I raced and stuff. And now I have a car, but my car stays parked and I ride my bicycle everywhere. And being a woman, of course, I have bicycles like we have shoes. I have a bicycle for every need. My main bicycle is just a 7-speed cruiser beater bike with baskets, wire baskets on the back that I can go grocery shopping with. Well, two little antidotes. This week, I was on my bicycle at night coming home from a symphony thing in the park, and I was able to see, find, and rescue a baby owl that was in the gutter on the side of the road. And it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't have been on my bicycle. And that was really cool. But then also, I live off Fisher Road and near White Rock Lake, and I was riding down the street, and I stopped at a stop sign, and some 19-year-old kid pulled up behind me, and I signaled for him to go around me, and he got mad at me and flipped me off. And I'm like, why does he do that? There is plenty of room. He could go around me, and he chose to get angry and flip me off, and it just blows my mind, the lack of sharing the road kind of attitude that people have towards bicyclists.
What do you think about that, Evan?
Well, I think that it was a stupid 19-year-old, first of all, and second of all, we live in a country where that behavior is sort of encouraged, where, you know, no wonder he feels like that. You know, a lot of much older people who should know better still behave like that. And as far as the owl, I'm glad he's rescued, and I hope he grows up to be mighty and strong and that he attacks that 19-year-old and pecks him in the face.
We have an email here from Jackie who wants to know your thoughts on bicycle helmet laws.
I think bicycle helmet laws are terrible. I think, and it has nothing to do with wearing a helmet or not wearing a helmet. You know, you're not going to go wrong wearing a helmet. Let's put it that way. But at the same time, you know, people like to focus on the helmet law because it's a really kind of simplistic way of sweeping the problem under the rug and saying like, oh yeah, the fact that the roads are so dangerous is your problem. You need more safety gear. Not that the streets need to be updated to accommodate all the people who need to use them. Not that in a lot of places like in New York, traffic laws aren't enforced and drivers aren't persecuted when they should be. No, the problem is your problem because you're not wearing a helmet. I don't want to be hit by a distracted driver or a drunk driver or a driver who runs a red light at 50 miles an hour with no helmet or with a helmet. It's going to end badly for me either way. So, and the other thing helmet laws do I'm emphasizing how dangerous cycling can be, but the truth is it's not that dangerous. I mean, I'm sure it's more dangerous to get in your car. Many more people are killed in car crashes. So it sends this message that this is some extreme activity that requires safety gear. Do you need safety gear when you're riding competitively or downhill mountain biking or whatever? Yes. Do you need a helmet to ride a couple of blocks to the store to pick up some vegetables or something? You're probably going to be fine without it. You know, people don't to make people feel like they have to strap all this safety gear on to ride around their neighborhoods is not addressing the issue, and it's not helping anybody. Fear-mongering.
One interesting issue that you raised here that I hadn't given a lot of thought to was the idea that you find that pedestrians who will yield to an oncoming car because they don't want to be hit by it somehow don't recognize any danger from an oncoming bicycle.
Yeah. People are much more prone to step out in front of bicycles, which they shouldn't do, obviously, because you can get hurt if you're hit by a fast-moving bicyclist. But at the same time, I like to think that, you know what, that as annoying as that is as a cyclist that people step in front of you, you know what that means? It means that bicycles are not intimidating. It means that people are not frightened of them, and that's a good thing. Why do we need to be surrounded by frightening objects all the time?
Is there anything you do when you happen to be driving a car that you think lets cyclists on the road next to you know that you're with them and that you mean no harm?
Apart from having a bike rack on my car and stuff like that. No, I think there's actually a danger in being overly, I shouldn't say considerate, but some people go way too far the opposite way. And let's say you're driving your car and it's very clear, maybe there's a cyclist nearby, and it's very clear that you have the right of way and you're driving safely and you're driving at a sane speed and you're doing all of that stuff. If you then see the person on the bike and stop when you shouldn't stop or, you know, go way too far in accommodating them, sometimes that just creates confusion and that can even be worse. So, when I'm driving a car, I just try to be aware, and you drive at a sensible speed, and you keep your eyes open, and all the common sense stuff. Yeah, I don't try to do anything like crazy or roll down the window and give them the thumbs up and go, I'm one of you. I don't really do that.
You are not necessarily a fan of ride your bike to work day, week, month, because you say that it sort of gives the tacit message that the rest of the time you ought not to do that.
Yeah. I admit, I exaggerate that a little bit because, sure, it's nice that people are like, hey, I'm going to ride my bike to work today. But, yeah, it's sort of right. It does send the message that, oh, it's a special occasion. It's like casual Friday or crazy shirt day or something like that. It would be nice if it was just normal enough that you didn't have to have a bike to work day, that it was just a mainstream. I think that's the thing I want the most is for cycling to just be like really boringly mainstream. Mm-hmm. For us not to have special, like you don't have wear shoes day, so why do we have to have a bike to work day?
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line, we have Edwin in Garland. Hey, Edwin.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Two comments. One, I'm 59. I lived in Central Square in Cambridge and commuted to the Prudential Tower for 12 years on a bike every day, on and off the sidewalk as appropriate, vigilant in my observations of traffic and people. Never had an incident. Good friend of mine, however, in his mid-50s, insisted on riding in the road. He said it was something that he didn't want to ride on a sidewalk. And eventually, when he moved to Florida, was hit in the rear end by a school teacher who had limited resources and a minimal amount of insurance. Hence, he destroyed his hip, his thigh bones, his knee, and basically ruined his life. He limps now, and he has ongoing lifelong injuries. So my question comment is, when you see folks, especially in the Dallas-Fort Worth area where I live in Garland now, I see folks on the road, on their bikes. I admire them. I used to participate, but not on the road. And I think it's just exceptional behavior in terms of taking care of yourself and the community and what have you. However, you're putting yourself at risk. If an uninsured vehicle hits you and these kind of things, I shake my head when I see them. So I guess that's my comment. I don't know if you have anything on that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Do you want to respond, Evan?
Only to say, it's terrible about his friend these are not things that are unique to cyclists you have a right to be on the road and terrible things happen to people driving in their cars, people are killed driving, people are, hit by other uninsured motorists while they're driving, and they're seriously hurt and they're killed, and you don't hear a lot of people saying, like, oh, you're making a bad decision by driving a car on the road. You should drive it on the sidewalk. You know what I mean? I don't think it's a fair comparison, really.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Chris on the line in Dallas now. Hey, Chris.
Good afternoon.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Evan, I got to see you. I didn't get to see you. We were in Washington together at the National Bike Summit back in March, and I got to read some of your book there. I was curious about, something else you mentioned, that I do believe that we are invisible. Let me explain. Back up a second here. I'm the founder of the Ride of Silence, which originates here in Dallas at White Rock Lake, goes around the world on the same day at the same time. It's a memorial ride that takes place very slow and silent. We just had it here on May 16th. It was the third Wednesday of May. I was curious of your participation in it and how we are invisible to courts, authorities, insurance companies, and the motorists.
What do you think, Evan?
About our invisibility?
Yeah.
This is a problem. Yeah. The way I see it play out where I live is that there's an incident between a cyclist and a driver. There seems to be a tacit assumption that it was somehow the cyclist's fault, or as we were just saying, that the cyclist was just implicitly making a poor decision by riding a bicycle in the street. What happens is oftentimes if a driver has done something illegal or they're not prosecuted for that. This is something that's really come to light here in New York recently. A lot of people have been drawing attention to it, and people are finally starting to address this issue that drivers are killing. This isn't just cyclists. This is pedestrians. You know, very often when drivers are killing cyclists, or pedestrians, it's a result of they're breaking the law, but they're not prosecuted for breaking the law, or they're getting a summons, just like you would for something where nobody got hurt. So
let me jump in.
We
have to take a break here. My guest is Evan Weiss. His new book is called The Enlightened Cyclist: Commuter Angst, Dangerous Drivers, and Other Obstacles on the Path to Two-Wheeled Transcendence. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a graduate education flexible enough to allow you to explore what matters most to you. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Bike Snob NYC blogger Evan Weiss. He also writes a column for Bicycling Magazine and is the author of the new book, The Enlightened Cyclist: Commuter Angst, Dangerous Drivers, and Other Obstacles on the Path to Two-Wheeled Transcendence. Join this conversation by calling in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Evan, we've talked about some of the dangers, some of the annoyances of commuting on a bicycle. Talk about the things that make it completely worthwhile to you.
What makes it worthwhile is just the ease of it, the convenience, the lack of expense, all of these things. It's really oftentimes in a busy place the fastest and easiest way to get around. You have a lot of freedom. You have the freedom of your route. You have the freedom from traffic. You have the freedom to park wherever you want. All of these things make it very enjoyable.
Do you bike in all weather?
All weather.
Well, New York City.
There's certainly times I'll look outside and say, I'm not riding in this. It's probably a lot more than some people, but everybody has their cutoff. I'm not going to ride in a tornado.
Yeah, nobody should.
No. Don't ride in tornadoes.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Troy on the line in Grapevine. Hello, Troy.
Hello. I ride a bicycle, I ride a motorcycle, I drive a car, and I drive a fire truck. And the American motorist cannot spare 10 seconds from his texting or talking to even allow any courtesy at all. It is not restricted to just bicycles. And I consider it, when a car tries to cut me off, I consider that attempted murder, because they might get dented sheet metal, but I get a permanent or disabling injury.
Hmm. So, yeah. So even when you're in the fire truck, you don't notice people being very careful?
Oh, they watch yourself at the next time you see one coming. See how many people actually pull to the right or yield to a fire truck. It's like they're almost invisible.
Oh, that's awful.
It's incredible out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people certainly relate to that. I can relate to that. I've never driven a fire truck. I've seen exactly what you describe, with people double parked and are too distracted to move their car for a fire truck. And I've ridden motorcycles plenty. And every thing you deal with on a bicycle from inconsiderate motorists, you deal with on a motorcycle, except you're going 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. So, yeah, it's a problem.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Before we take the next call, I want to know if you think, Eben, that why it is that it does seem that for cyclists, and maybe motorcyclists as well, the ones who set the bad examples are the ones that stick in everybody's mind, whereas if somebody cuts me off in traffic in a car, I don't think everybody in a station wagon or a mm-hmm. minivan is a bad person.
Mm-hmm. It's just the dynamics of the way the mainstream works, and how, again, like I said earlier, the reason nobody seems to have the same degree of outrage when a driver runs a stop sign as when a cyclist runs a stop sign is this sort of, like, we've surrendered to this notion that cars are the way to get around, and that we're blind to the carnage they cause, and we're blind in many cases to the alternatives as far as how to get around. So when something that's outside of the mainstream comes into your purview all of a sudden, this stuff is jumping out at you. Oh, my God, the 150-pound person on the 20-pound bicycle rolled through a stop sign at 8 miles an hour somehow seems much worse than a minivan driving through a stop sign at 20 or something. And it's just we're desensitized. That's really what it is. It's we're desensitized.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Steve's on the line now in Euless. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Again. Your show is just amazing every single day.
Thank you.
You're part of my life.
Thank you.
Eric, really enjoyed the conversation, and I commuted when I was back in the 70s going to college. I had a 20-mile each way ride to UCLA and absolutely enjoyed it, and actually got a ticket for exceeding the speed limit. But my question is a little bit more towards my lifestyle now, where I walk the dog in the park. We've got a beautiful park near my home. There's a lot of pedestrians, and there's some blind turns, and I'd say that half the bicyclists now, 30% of the bicyclists are total kamikaze around the turns, riding up behind you, no warning. I've seen people have their baby carriages hit, people knocked down, broken collarbone, broken arms, running over dogs. What can I do to suggest to these people that the pedestrian has the right of way? Please get a bell. You know, what can I do?
I don't know what you could do, but I mean, I am with you. I talk about this in the book, that an unfortunate thing that happens is cyclists can be guilty of all the things they complain about for motorists, you know, about pedestrians, seeing pedestrians as an annoyance, or not being considerate towards them, and, you know, not slowing down for them and all of that. And I mean, it's a wrong-headed way of being, for sure. As far as what you can do about it, I don't know. I don't know if it's a problem with the way the park is designed, or if it's just a problem with the people who are using the park, the cyclists, if maybe they're new to cycling, and they're, you know, you do have one of the things that's happened with this most recent bike boom is that it's great in a lot of ways. You do have a certain amount, though, of exuberant new cyclists who are so excited to be on bikes. Maybe they're not thinking that way. The same thing that makes them race their fellow cyclists or whatever it is. So not sure what to do about it, but yes, I mean, I say in my book, I say all the time, you have to be mindful of pedestrians because it's exactly the same as when a motorist doesn't give you consideration.
Part of this renewed cycling boom, I guess, is the fact that bicycles have become somewhat cool in a way that they maybe weren't in the past. And you write about this thing you call cycle chic, where you have to drive around looking like Dick Cavett when you're getting to and from. Can you talk a little bit about the way that people sort of tog themselves out to ride these days?
Well, there's sort of, we seem as people to have to latch on to some image, whatever that image may be. So one of the recent images that have come about, you know, that you've had sort of cycling advocates and so forth who want to kind of send the message that, you know, cycling's not necessarily about wearing lycra and going fast. It's also about wearing, you know, just looking good, looking like a normal person and riding a normal bike and doing normal things, which is great. But that sort of doubles over on itself at a certain point with the sort of cycle chic thing or even the tweed ride thing, where people get way into wearing super fancy clothes and riding super fancy bikes, and it becomes kind of precious and funny. So yeah, there's exuberance, you know, and maybe there is something about bicycles that makes people want to dress up. I guess that's what comes of being a part of what is still in a lot of ways a subculture.
Would you like to see the U.S. look more like a place, for example, Amsterdam, where everybody's riding bikes, nobody thinks it's strange, and there are really more of them on the roads than there are cars?
Well, certainly just when you go to Amsterdam and you see just how mainstream it is and how none of this stuff is attached, there's no controversy attached to it, there's no real political statement attached to it, there's not a style attached to it, it's just a way to get around. That, yeah, I certainly envy. America is a very big place, obviously, and every city in America is different. Every town in America is different. You know, you have huge variety of places. So can every place in America be like Amsterdam? Of course not. But there's certainly a lot to be learned from it. There's certainly cities or parts of cities that could be that way, and one day probably will be that way. So it's certainly something to look to. But what they get right most of all, though, is the respect for humanity they have there. You know, Amsterdam is a place, or the Netherlands is a place, where they decided in the 1970s that they're not going to accept the death toll that comes with being a strictly a car-centric country. They're going to rein that back, and they succeeded in that. So that's something we can learn.
I have this lasting memory of being there and very stupidly, as a pedestrian, stepping into a bike lane, into the path of an oncoming cycle, completely my fault. The guy had to stop short. I expected to get screamed at, and he sort of stopped, dusted him. He didn't fall, but he kind of got himself going again and gave me a friendly wave and a smile, and it was astonishing.
That's a nice guy. I've heard the opposite. I've always heard people saying that they just stepped into the bike lane and they got a real tongue-lashing. So
maybe I got lucky.
Got a nice guy.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Jason on the line in Keller. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I really appreciate the guest coming to share his views about cycling. I'm a pediatrician, and so to the extent that people can do more cycling and keep moving and battle the epidemic of obesity, that's a great thing. But I wanted to see if Evan would qualify his previous statement about not wearing safety equipment for short journeys, and not extend that to children who really need to be wearing a helmet anytime they're on a bike.
Well, yeah. I mean, most places, when we were talking about helmet laws, I'm talking about adults. And most places, I believe, certainly where I live, kids have to wear helmets. I forget up to whatever age it is, but to whenever they're in their teens or something. And yes, absolutely. I don't have a problem with kids having to wear helmets.
And whether there's a law or not, you're a big advocate for people who will be cycling at night having some lights on their bikes.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a law everywhere. And yes, absolutely, you should have lights on your bike. That's extremely important.
All right, let's go. I think we have time for one more call. We'll have Greg on the line in Dallas. Hey, Greg.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a couple of comments. I'm a lifelong cyclist of in excess of 30 years. It's a big passion of mine, and it's a big part of my life. And I've grown up as a casual rider. I've commuted. I've raced at various levels in the amateur ranks. I've toured. So I've kind of done it all. In addition to riding a motorcycle, I drive a car. So I've got, you know, all the skills and experiences of using our roadways. And I don't think a lot of the motorists have that same perspective. And I've had to, unfortunately, take the tactic of riding more offensively to protect myself. I've been in the Dallas area now for maybe 3 or 4 years, and I've had more close calls from what one of the previous callers mentioned, just people being impatient, not taking the time to pass safely and trying to squeeze between me and maybe an oncoming car, and it puts not just my life in danger, but the oncoming vehicle. So, you know, I tend to ride a little bit left of the side of the road, and I control when people can pass. And I would just urge people that are out there to keep their heads up and pay attention and just realize we're out there trying to improve our lives and have a good time and would prefer to do it safely. So thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Anything you'd add to that, Evan?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, when he talks about riding offensively, you know, that's been a type of riding people have had to do for a long time in this country, and that's the way you had to ride in New York for a long time, and you still have to ride that way at least some of the time. The unfortunate part of that type of riding is that it keeps cycling limited to you know, people like the caller and people like me who would be riding anyway and who are familiar with racing and all of that. And what's nice, what's finally happening here in New York is that with the infrastructure they're building, you don't have to do that anymore so much. You know, you can ride like a normal person, and that's the way it should be. And I absolutely relate to everything that caller was saying, and hopefully things get better, and they are getting better.
When you're riding in a place without designated bike lanes, do you feel like you're better off sticking to the center of an auto lane, or do you sometimes, if you go off to the right, then the cars feel like they can pass right by you in the same lane?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on a lot of factors. It depends how fast the cars are going. It depends if there's parked cars on the side. It depends if there's a little extra room for me. So, it really depends on a lot of factors.
Do you have a favorite route in the country or in the world that if you could ride there every day, you would?
Wow, good question. That's a long answer because it's, you know, when you talk about riding in a city or riding in the countryside or something like that. So, for recreational cycling, places like Northern California, amazing. For urban riding in the United States, you know, for commuting, places like Portland, Madison, Wisconsin, places like that. But, you know, I'm lucky in New York. We've got it pretty good considering we're such a huge city and we have our share of problems. Like we have all kinds of great riding here, so I'm pretty happy.
Evan Weiss blogs as Bike Snob NYC and is the author of The Enlightened Cyclist: Commuter Angst, Dangerous Drivers, and Other Obstacles on the Path to Two-Wheeled Transcendence. Evan, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. Learn more about the show and find out about upcoming programs. You can also check out the free daily podcast at kera.org/think. If you want to tell us something, make a comment, ask a question, send an email to think@kera.org. I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.